This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Hong Kong's protest movement took a violent turn on Sunday. AP's Ben Thomas explains.
Sunday's massive march started peacefully, with protesters chanting slogans including Free Hong Kong. But as it reached a police-designated endpoint, thousands continued onward, at various points occupying key government and business districts, throwing eggs, spray-painting surveillance cameras, and splattering China's national emblem with black ink. As darkness fell, police fired tear gas, scattering demonstrators, many coughing and dousing their eyes with water. Meanwhile, Hong Kong media outlets released video footage showing masked assailants attacking commuters in a subway station. Ben Thomas.
A leading House Democrat, House Judiciary Committee Chairman Gerald Nadler, told Fox Television Sunday that Special Counsel Robert Mueller will give very substantial evidence that will make the case for impeaching U.S. President Donald Trump. Mueller is set to testify before two House committees Wednesday on his investigation into whether the Trump campaign colluded with Russia to meddle in the 2016 presidential election. He's also to address whether Mr. Trump obstructed justice in trying to derail the probe. Mueller has said that he chose the words in his report very carefully. It would not provide any other information in any public testimony. But Nadler says lawmakers will ask Mueller some very specific questions about parts of the report. The Mueller report concluded there was not enough evidence to determine that President Trump or his campaign colluded with Russia, but Mueller wrote he could not exonerate Mr. Trump of allegations of obstruction of justice. Mueller turned the matter over to Attorney General William Barr. Barr said he would find no evidence of obstruction. And, of course, President Trump all along has said that he has done nothing wrong. This is VOA News. President Trump has resumed his Twitter attack on four Democratic congresswomen. AP correspondent Shelley Adler.
Quoting the president on Twitter, "I don't believe the four congresswomen are capable of loving our country." And to echo that, Trump campaign advisor Mercedes Schlapp on ABC's This Week.
"These Democratic presidential candidates are going to have to kiss the ring of the squad because they are the new voices of the Democrat Party, and that should be concerning."
But Democratic Congressman Elijah Cummings isn't worried.
"These are folks and women who love their country, and they work very hard, and they want to move us towards that more perfect union that our founding fathers talked about."
Cummings also spoke on ABC's This Week. Shelley Adler, Washington.
A gun and suicide bomb attack in northwestern Pakistan has killed at least 10 people, including security personnel. More than 30 others have been injured. Salim Riaz, the police chief in the city of Dera Ismail Khan, told reporters a group of four gunmen riding motorcycles Sunday morning opened fire at a security checkpoint in a residential area, killing two policemen. Later, a suicide bomber dressed in a burqa attacked the entrance to the hospital where the victims from the first attack were taken, causing further casualties. The Pakistani Taliban told VOA in an email that they claim responsibility for the attacks. U.S. President Trump meets with Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan Monday at the White House. Mr. Trump is expected to press for Pakistan's assistance advancing the peace process in Afghanistan. He's also expected to encourage Pakistan to deepen its crackdown on militants within its own borders. Pakistan has arranged Washington's direct peace negotiations with Taliban insurgents. Taliban militants are fighting local and U.S.-led international troops in neighboring Afghanistan. The months-long U.S.-Taliban dialogue has brought the two adversaries in the 18-year-old Afghan war close to concluding a peace agreement that would pave the way to ending what has become the longest U.S. foreign military intervention. British officials are drawing up plans to target Iran with sanctions for its seizing of a British-flagged oil tanker on the Strait of Hormuz Friday, and they may urge EU countries to reimpose sanctions that were lifted in 2016 as part of Tehran's agreement to curb its nuclear program. A British warship had warned an Iranian patrol boat against interfering with the passage of the ship. That's according to a new recording released Sunday by the maritime security risk firm Dryad Global. Although the officer said the ship was wanted for security reasons, Iranian officials say the seizure was in response to Britain's impounding 2 weeks ago of an Iranian supertanker at Gibraltar that was believed to be transporting 2 million barrels of crude oil to Syria. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, July 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan's armed forces and the rebels are ordered to report to cantonment sites.
They have been directed by the Joint Defense Force to assemble their forces. The cantonment sites and barracks effective immediately on the 20th to the 31st July.
Colonel Paul Gabriel is the deputy military spokesman for South Sudan's rebel SPLAIO. Malawi's former vice president tells President Peter Mutharika to step down. Rwanda denies an Ebola outbreak on its soil. And Cameroon separatists react to reports of a Swiss government mediation in the English-speaking region's crisis.
We have heard talks with the Swiss government and their partners, but none of it can be described as negotiations.
Chris Anu is the spokesperson for the self-proclaimed Ambazonia separatist movement of Cameroon, and Liberians in the United States take part in an early Independence Day festivities. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's post are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The deputy military spokesman for South Sudan's rebel SPLAIO says the group's forces have begun to assemble at cantonment sites around the country. This comes after the Joint Defense Board, made up of military commanders from the South Sudan Army and rebels, last Friday ordered all forces to start gathering beginning July 20th. The peace agreement calls for the establishment of about 40 cantonment camps to screen troops and rebels in preparation for integration. But the process was delayed due to logistics. SPLAIO Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Paul Gabriel says this is a positive sign that finally there could be a light at the end of the tunnel.
JDB, that is the Joint Defense Board, held a meeting on last week, Friday, and the order is being directed to all sectors and division commanders of the government forces. That is the SSPDF, then the National Police, the National Security Service, and other organized forces. Then also it was directed to the all sectors and division commanders of the SPLAIO, and also it goes to all sectors and division commanders of the SOA forces, that is South Sudan Opposition Alliance. So they have been directed by the Joint Defense Board to assemble their forces, the cantonment site and barracks, effective immediately on the 20th to the 31st. By the 31st July, we would like to get details from the commanders about their forces being assembled in the cantonment site and the barracks.
Your forces, have you begun to assemble?
Yes, many of these cantonment sites already have got our forces, because if you remember in February, there was that initial order that was given also by the Joint Defense Force to make sure people go to cantonment sites. And our commander-in-chief, Dr. Riek Machar-Teng, also gave that order to make sure our forces go into the cantonment site. During that very moment, our forces reported to the cantonment site. Not all the cantonment sites, though. Of recent, the Joint Military Ceasefire Commission verified over 20 cantonment sites and noticed that some of the cantonment sites are not suitable. So we had to relocate the cantonment site to a different area because of accessibility, or maybe they are also close to civilian centers. So this newly relocated cantonment site will have to be occupied. These are the ones that really need our forces to go into. But at the moment, three-quarters of the cantonment site already have our forces.
This has been one of the major hurdles in terms of implementing the last peace agreement. What does this say now about moving forward?
Yes, it is a positive sign, and we are looking forward that this implementation is going to work very well, because when these forces report into the cantonment site, the Joint Military Ceasefire Commission will be sending their team to go and register these forces in their barracks and their cantonment site. And also the Joint Transitional Security Committee, that is the JTSC, will also go into the cantonment site to start screening of these forces. Those who want to go and join the Unified National Police will go. Those who also want to remain in the army will also be screened. And those who want to go to the police force also will also decide to go. Those ones will be screened by the JTSC. So it is a very good, let me say, step towards the implementation of the security arrangement.
The implementation of the process was delayed. And then your leader, the former Vice President Riek Machar, that also delayed his return to South Sudan. Now, I think it's this November that both sides have to come to some agreement to have this transitional process going. Do we see a light at the end of the tunnel?
Yes, I'm very positive that there is a light at the end of the tunnel because, you know, according to the program of the Joint Transitional Security Committee, they're in charge of the screening of the forces and also the training of the forces. Now, their program for training is only 2 months. That is in September and October. And we are still here in July. We should end July. We believe by August, we'll be able to screen all the forces that is required to be deployed as necessary force and send them for training by September. So there is a light at the end of the tunnel as far as the formation of the revitalized transitional government of national unity is concerned.
Thank you very much again, sir. We are always happy to have you on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you too, James Bar.
Colonel Lampaul Gabriel is the Deputy Military Spokesman for South Sudan's rebel SPLA-IO. He was speaking with me from Kampala, Uganda. A spokesman for Cameroon's self-proclaimed Ambazonian Republic says the group has held talks in the past with the Swiss government and its partners, but that such talks cannot be described as negotiations. The group has said it will welcome talks with what spokesman Chris Anu calls French Cameroon, but that such negotiation must be facilitated by either the United Nations, United States, or the European Union. Switzerland's ambassador to Cameroon said last week that his government was seeking a peaceful end to the conflict in Cameroon's English-speaking regions. Ambassador Pietro Lazzari said both sides have accepted Swiss mediation. Chris Anu says the separatists are aware of the Swiss government's effort to negotiate.
We are aware they have promised to mediate, that they are mediating and have promised to mediate are two different things. We have not seen any mediation or we have not been to any mediation. Maybe they are mediating or talking to the government of French Cameroon, not with us. Let me also add this. The Swiss government cannot mediate or negotiate on our behalf. The Swiss government can facilitate mediations. The mediators have to be chosen by us. Ambazonians, we have held talks with the Swiss government and their partners, but none of it can be described as negotiations.
Chris, do you know one Mark Barita? I understand he's a representative of the movement. He has said, quoted as saying on Facebook, that two meetings have already taken place in Geneva between the separatists and the Cameroonian government.
Mike Barita is ignorant. He is not fully aware of the exact arrangement or discussions that took place. What he is referring to are non-formal meetings, as I said, that took place between Ambazonian representatives and the Swiss NGO called Human Rights Dialogue or something like that, and the representatives of the Swiss government. We do not describe that as any form of negotiations or dialogue.
I know you say you are not talking now, but would you welcome Swiss intervention?
We will welcome anybody who comes in as a neutral party to initiate discussions, a settlement between Ambazonians and French Cameroon. Any form of dialogue, negotiation that ends in a free and independent Southern Cameroon, we welcome that person.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed Ambazonia Separatist Movement of Cameroon. He was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Houston in Texas. Today is Monday, July 22nd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. Rwanda has refuted reports that a Congolese woman who succumbed to Ebola might have passed through Rwanda on her way from Uganda, leading to speculations that the deadly virus could have reached Rwanda. But as Yuji Uwimana reports from Kigali, the World Health Organization also confirmed the Rwandan government's denial.
According to Rwandan Health Minister Dr. Diane Kashumba, there has been no case of Ebola virus in the country.
There is not any person who has tested positive for Ebola in our country.
There have been reports by the World Health Organization that the fishmonger who vomited at a popular marketplace in the Ugandan border town of Mpondwe might have also done business in Rwanda before returning to DRC where she died. Rwandan Health Minister Dr. Gashumba says these are lies that might have been propagated by the country's enemies to tarnish its image.
hari abantu babafite umwanya wo kwirakwiza impuha badafite icyo bakora cyangwa se bashaka kuturangaza.
There are many people who have time to disseminate lies, who don't have anything else to do apart from tarnishing the image of the country, who don't wish anything good for us. We are urging Rwandans not to listen to those rumors. There is a proper channel of informing them whatever happens. Only the Ministry of Health, in conjunction with WHO, can declare that there is or there is not an outbreak. The World Health Organization also later on dismissed these reports, saying they were not authentic. Dr. Margaret Harris is the WHO spokesperson.
We have investigated fully. There was no travel to anywhere but Uganda. There was concern. The conjecture referred to Rwanda. During the time she was ill, she only traveled to Uganda. Now, that's a serious enough issue already.
The fish trader traveled to Beni in DRC on July 12 and was admitted to the Beni Ebola treatment unit on July 13. She died on July 15 after testing positive for Ebola. This comes after an evangelical preacher died of Ebola in the eastern DRC city of Goma, the first recorded case of the disease in the key urban hub, which neighbors Rwanda. Rwanda has never had a recorded case of Ebola and has trained over 23,000 medical personnel, police officers, and volunteers in preparation to fight eventual outbreak. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Former Malawi Vice President Saulos Chilima of the opposition United Transformation Movement, UTM Party, has called on President Arthur Peter Mutharika to step down because he says the president has failed to fix the country's political and economic problems. Chilima made the comments on Sunday while commemorating the one-year anniversary of his party's founding. Chilima's UTM party and the Malawi Congress Party have challenged the results of the country's May 21st presidential election because they say the poll was manipulated. Joseph Chidante Malunga is the spokesman for the former vice president.
We have been protesting the election results because of so many irregularities that we have taken to court. And we believe that he's not a legitimate leader right now. That's why the former vice president called on him to resign.
The former vice president said the president should step down because of his failure to fix the economy and the political and social problems in the country. But when we say that it's your party that may be contributing to political instability by your refusal to accept the results.
No, we are not contributing anything because we know that the rightful way to do this is to take the matter to court, which we have done. So we are waiting for the court to give us the verdict. So it is within our rights to say we don't feel that the results are correct and therefore we are protesting and taking the court. So we have fought in the correct way. Even the demonstrations where we are participating in the streets, they are all within the laws of Malawi. So nothing that we're doing outside the law.
So how would you describe the economic situation now in Malawi?
It is very bad. Within the last few months, it's been worse. You know, it's very difficult for one to make ends meet right now. The people that are living in the rural areas are the most affected. It's hard to get food for the day and things like that. So it is very bad, really. And the forex, the exchange rate of our currency against major foreign currencies is worsening every day.
The Malawi Election Commission has applied for a court order or injunction to, what is that, restrain the Malawi Congress Party and your party from disrupting its meetings with its presiding officers. What do you make of the injunction?
Well, the matter is in the court. As you know, that it may not be prudent for us to discuss this, but I think it is coming from the fact that a few days ago, Malawi Electoral Commission sent its lawyers across the country trying to collect information. But as you know, that if you go out in Malawi today and talk about Malawi Electoral Commission and, you know, try to assemble people somewhere, get information, you're just igniting fire. I mean, the people, they don't want to hear Malawi Electoral Commission anywhere in this country. So to go out and solicit information was really very bad timing. So people started, you know, questioning and things like that. Of course, some people were laughed up just because it is something concerning Malawi Electoral Commission. So what we're saying as a party, as UTM, we say, Yes, everyone has got the right to go out and collect information from their officers. After all, it's their officers. But we think the process has to be done transparently.
Joseph Chidante Malunga is the spokesman of the United Transformation Movement Party, led by former Vice President Saulos Chilima. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lilongwe. The Liberian capital, Monrovia, is bracing to welcome a number of West African leaders for this week's celebrations marking the country's 172nd independence anniversary on July 26. A three-day protest called by the Council of Patriots against government-sponsored festivities was postponed to July 30th following an appeal from the U.S. Embassy in Monrovia. The Liberian Embassy in Washington on Saturday celebrated with Liberians in the United States. I spoke with some of them about celebrating Independence Day, beginning with Ambassador George Patton.
Mr. Ambassador, happy 26 to you.
Thank you, James.
What does this independence mean to you and to all Liberians?
It's a huge day for celebration. 172 years ago, we declared our independence. We're in the first country in Africa, first republic in Africa. So for us, it tells a deep story. It's a day of celebration, our making, and being thankful to God for bringing us this far.
There are people who have talked about the cost of the celebration in Liberia. What do you think?
There shouldn't be celebrating your independence anniversary. You're talking about cost. How much is it?
They said $1 million. Some people say 1.5.
I don't believe that. I'm happy we're celebrating July 26th.
Yes.
This is the day on which we declare independence. Why we would not celebrate it?
Mr. Ambassador, you're new in Washington. Any particular message for Liberians here in the United States and elsewhere in the diaspora?
Since we've been here, we've spoken to our people. We've gone across the length and breadth of this country, and the message has been unity. We must be united. We must move our country. We must focus on where we come from. We must invest in our country and ensure that our country remains peaceful and stable.
Happy 26th to you.
Thank you, James.
Wilma Campbell Mashinini Red.
Wilma, happy 26th to you.
Happy 26th to you, Jimmy.
Thank you. What does this day mean to you?
Well, you know, this day doesn't just mean that Liberia became the first independent country in Africa. It means that the whole of Africa was now open to start gaining independence, proving that, yes, we can rule ourselves. So it's important not just to us, Liberians. It's important to Africa, I would say the world, especially the black world.
Wilma, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Historically, it's right for a country to celebrate its independence, despite the circumstances that surround, you know, the celebration, because there are consequences at times. But as a Liberian, I feel that this is something that you cannot undo. Liberia was established on this day, 1847. We gained our independence, so there's nothing we can do. So, I mean, I'm happy to be a Liberian and to memorialize this particular day.
Some people are very concerned that the country should not be celebrating because economically people are not doing very well and they feel the government should not spend money. What do you think?
Personally, I believe that if I was the president of the Republic of Liberia, I would have canceled the celebration because there are economic hardships. The money the government is using to have this Independence Day celebration will have been used to renovate the hospitals, buy medical supplies, and they spend the money on the people.
Mandela, thank you very much again, and happy 26th.
Thank you, Mr. James Butter. It's good to speak with you again.
Happy 26th, Mona.
I don't know if I should say happy because I don't think we are happy in Liberia, so I can't say happy, but this is our Independence Day.
Some people say you have to be patriotic to celebrate independence.
Yeah, but you can be a patriotic both ways. It's either this is good or it's not good. And be patriotic is saying the truth. We are not happy. Our country is going down the drain.
Semende, happy 26th to you.
Happy 26th to you as well.
And what do you have here?
Well, we are here today with the Kids Corner.
What do you have for the children?
We have cotton candy, popcorn, all out of different activities. We have water popsicle, anything you can think about, balloons, everything to make the children.
So is it free?
Everything for the kids are free.
Why did you do it?
We did it because we see that every year, number one, we are with the Friends of the Embassy. Our purpose is to enhance the embassy. We are not a political group. We are a group that is here to do whatever we can for our country, to make our country better.
Semete, thank you very much, and happy 26.
Thank you so much, Mr. Bati. It's always a pleasure to see you.
the views of some Liberians in the United States as they celebrated their country's independence anniversary on Saturday here in Washington. Time now for Daybreak Africa's Post. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Algiers, where African Cup of Nations champions Algeria arrived home on Saturday to a hero's welcome from a huge crowd of joyful supporters and a water salute for their plane at Algiers Airport. Tens of thousands of flag-waving fans lining the road from the airport chanted as the players went on a victory parade through the capital in an open-top bus. An early strike earned a 1-0 victory over Senegal in Friday's final in Cairo, propelling Algeria, known as the Phoenix Foxes, to a first Cup of Nations title in 29 years. On Friday night, it was Baghdad Bounidjah who gave Algeria a dream start in the second minute when his deflected shot looped over Senegal goalkeeper Alfred Gomes, and it proved enough for the 1990 champions to lift the trophy on a foreign soil for the first time. Some football fans described Algeria victory as well deserved.
They scored early, and which is natural. Sometimes you try to hold on to what you have, and you know they made it difficult for the Senegalese. But that, at that moment, we saw a Senegalese team that showed a lot of character. They showed a lot of desire, and that's all you can ask when you lose. They gave everything on the pitch today.
Mm. They're sitting in, they're managing the game. They got their goal in the first minute. Why open it? Lift the trophy, that's it.
And staying with the African Cup of Nations, 2019 AFCON winners, Desert Foxes of Algeria, will receive a cash reward of $4.5 million for emerging champions of the tournament, while the Teranga Lions of Senegal, who emerged first runners-up, will collect $2.5 million. Nigeria's Super Eagles will receive a $2 million cash prize for their third-place finish. CAF unveiled all the participating teams' earnings at the tournament, with host Pharaohs, who were eliminated in the second round, consoling themselves with a total prize money of $670,000. The 2019 African Cup of Nations may be well over, but there are still stories making the headlines as a result of the fallout from the championship. Nigeria striker Odion Ighalo announced on Saturday his retirement from international football after winning the Golden Boot at the African Cup of Nations. The 30-year-old Shanghai Shenhua striker struck five times as the Super Eagles finished third in Egypt, bagging him the top scorer honors with two goals more than Sadio Mane and Riyad Mahrez and Cedric Bakambu. In total, Ighalo scored 16 goals for Nigeria in 35 appearances, and he also captained the country's under 20 team to the 2009 World Cup, also held in Egypt. Elsewhere, Hervé Renard has left his post as Morocco coach after their shock early exit at the African Cup of Nations. The 50-year-old Frenchman wrote on Twitter on Sunday, quote, "It's time for me to close this long and beautiful chapter of my life, not without some emotion and sadness." End of quote. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The deputy military spokesman for South Sudan's rebel SPLA-IO says the group's forces have begun to assemble at cantonment sites around the country. This comes after the Joint Defense Board last Friday ordered all forces to start gathering beginning July 20th. And that's it for this Monday, July 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscast covering Africa news. Tune in on the top of each hour 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.